This article is brought to you by the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to stop excusing toxic traits in people you love. Because love without honesty is just a slower kind of harm. In short, after reading this, you will be able to name harmful patterns in people you love, set honest limits, and stop absorbing the cost of behaviour you've been excusing for too long. Name the specific pattern before you attempt any conversation. Separate love for the person from acceptance of the behaviour. Set clear limits with real consequences, and follow through on them. Definition: toxic traits. Excusing means repeatedly justifying or overlooking harmful behaviour in someone you care about, often driven by love, fear, or loyalty. Over time, this pattern normalises the harm and prevents the person causing it from facing any real accountability. You sat across from your sister at Christmas dinner and watched her cut your mother to pieces with one sentence. Everyone laughed it off. You laughed too. On the drive home, you felt sick, and you spent the next hour telling yourself she did not mean it, that she had always been like this, that it was just her way. That is the moment most people recognise. Not the behaviour itself, but the story they built around it afterward to make it bearable. The real reason toxic traits excusing happens so often in close relationships is not ignorance. You know something is wrong. The problem runs deeper: fear of losing the relationship, years of history that make the pattern feel normal, and a genuine belief that love requires you to absorb the damage. Nobody teaches you that accepting harm is not loyalty. It is a slow erosion. In this guide, you'll get a clear, practical process for toxic traits excusing that you can use immediately, whether the person in question is a partner, a parent, a sibling, or a close friend. Why excusing toxic traits is harder than it looks. Knowing something is harmful and actually being able to address it are two entirely different things. Most people have already tried, in their own way, and found themselves back at the same table making the same excuses within a week. Here is why it is genuinely hard. Love distorts your perception over time. When you care deeply about someone, your mind works hard to protect the relationship. You focus on their best moments and treat the harmful ones as exceptions, even when the data says otherwise. The pattern has been normalized across years. Toxic traits really announce themselves. They build slowly, one small incident at a time, until the behavior that would have shocked you a decade ago now feels like background noise. Fear of conflict is real and rational. If past attempts to raise the issue ended in rage, tears, or a week of silence, your nervous system learned to avoid the subject. That is not weakness. That is a trained response. You have invested too much to walk away easily. Years of history, shared memories, and genuine affection create a sunk cost pool. Naming the problem feels like dismantling something you helped build. The person you love is also capable of real warmth. Toxic traits really belong to monsters. They belong to people who are sometimes kind, sometimes generous, and sometimes genuinely harmful. That complexity makes clarity feel like betrayal. The goal is not to eliminate these difficulties. It is to build a system that works in spite of them. The foundation. What you need before you start. Before you begin, there are three things that need to be clear. Number one, honest pattern recognition. You need to see the behavior as a pattern, not a series of isolated incidents. Write down specific examples: what happened, where it happened, and how it affected you. This is not about building a legal case against someone. It is about stripping away the rationalization so you can see clearly what you are actually dealing with. Number two, separation of person from behavior. You can love someone and still refuse to accept what they do. These are not contradictory positions. The work ahead requires you to hold both truths at once. This person matters to me, and this behavior is causing real harm. If you can't make that distinction before you start, every step that follows will collapse under the weight of guilt. Number three, clarity about your own limits. Before any conversation, you need to know what you are and are not willing to accept going forward. Not in vague terms like "I need to be treated better." Specific terms: what will you do if the behavior continues? What changes are you actually asking for? Vague limits produce vague outcomes. Get these right first. The steps that follow will not work without them. Step 1. Name the pattern in plain language. This step requires you to describe what is actually happening without softening it for the sake of comfort. Most people spend years describing toxic traits in the gentlest possible terms, which makes it nearly impossible to address them with any directness. "She can be a bit much sometimes" is not a description. It is a retreat. Before you can change anything, You need to be able to say clearly what the pattern is and what it costs you. Write down 3 to 5 specific incidents that represent the pattern, using plain, factual language. Describe what the person did, what they said, and what the effect was on you or others. Avoid explanations or justifications in this step. Those come later and belong to the other person. Read what you've written back to yourself and notice whether you feel the urge to cross anything out because it sounds too harsh. If you find yourself softening the language, that resistance is information. It tells you how much work the excusing has done. Example: Sarah had spent 3 years describing her partner's behavior as having a short fuse. When she wrote it down plainly, it read, "When I disagree with him in front of others, he mocks my opinion and then denies he meant anything by it afterward." Those are 2 different sentences. The first lets him off the hook. The second gives her something she can actually address. Naming the pattern clearly is what made the conversation possible. Once you can name it plainly, you have solid ground to stand on. That ground matters more than you know. Step 2. Separate the excuse from the explanation. Understanding why someone behaves the way they do is useful. Using that understanding to excuse the behavior is where the harm compounds. This step is about learning to hold an explanation in one hand and a limit in the other. At the same time, your partner had a difficult childhood. That is real, and it matters. It does not mean you are required to absorb the ongoing cost of how the childhood shaped his behavior. An explanation accounts for something. It does not eliminate it. When you catch yourself making an excuse, name it out loud or on paper. "I am excusing this because..." Ask yourself whether the explanation you're offering would hold up if a friend described the same situation to you. Practice the phrase, "I understand why this is hard for them, and it is still not acceptable." Notice whether the person themselves uses their history as a reason or as a shield, because those are very different uses of the same story. Write down what you have absorbed as a result of the behavior, separate from any explanation of its origin. This distinction is one of the most important you will make in this entire process. Compassion and self-protection are not opposites. You can respect the roots of someone's pain without letting that pain take root in you. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblickthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Step 3. Choose your moment and your words with care. The conversation you've been avoiding will not go well if you have it in the middle of an argument, after a glass of wine, or in the 10 minutes before someone has to leave. Timing and preparation are not about making the conversation comfortable. They're about giving it a genuine chance of being heard. I've watched too many people attempt this kind of conversation at the worst possible moment and then conclude that the conversation cannot be had at all. The moment failed them. The conversation still needs to happen. Choose a time when neither of you is already activated, tired, or pressed for time. Decide in advance what the single most important thing is that you want to say, and say that first. Use specific language about behavior, not character. "When you do X, the effect on me is Y," rather than "you're always." Write out your opening 2 sentences and practice them until they feel steady, not rehearsed. Give the other person space to respond. This is a conversation, not a verdict. Script: "I want to talk about something that has been affecting me, and I want to do it where we are both calm. When you specific behavior, I feel specific effect. I'm not saying this to attack you. I'm saying it because I want things to be different between us, and I think they can be." After this conversation, something will have shifted. The pattern will have been named aloud between the two of you. That matters, regardless of how the other person responds. Step 4. Set a limit that you can actually keep. A limit you cannot follow through on is not a limit. It is a warning that confirms to the other person that the behavior carries no real cost. This is the step most people skip or soften beyond recognition. They say, "I need you to stop doing that," without attaching any clear consequence. And when the behavior continues, which it often will at first, they feel powerless. The limit was never real because it had no weight behind it. Define the specific behavior you are no longer willing to accept in writing. Define what you will do if that behavior continues, and make sure it is something you're genuinely prepared to do. Keep the limit focused on your own actions, not on demand about what the other person must change. Tell the other person the limit and the consequence in calm, direct language. "If this happens again, I will specific action. Follow through the first time the limit is crossed, because that is the moment your limit either becomes real or dissolves. Here is the truth of it. The limit is not punishment. It is clarity. You are telling the other person what the relationship now looks like, because the old version was costing you more than you were willing to say. Step 5. Manage the pressure to return to the old pattern. After you set a limit, the pressure to go back to excusing will be enormous. Expect it. Plan for it. The person you love may react with hurt, anger, silence, or a sudden burst of warmth that makes everything feel resolved when nothing has actually changed. These responses are not necessarily manipulative. They are often the natural reaction of someone whose world has just shifted, but they will pull you back toward the old pattern if you are not prepared for them. Write down in advance the 3 most likely ways the other person will respond, and plan how you will hold your position in each case. Identify 1 or 2 people in your life you can speak to honestly about what you are navigating, people who will not simply tell you to forgive and forget. When you feel the pull to retreat, ask yourself, what will be different this time if I go back? Give the other person time to adjust, but do not mistake their discomfort for proof that you are wrong. Return to what you wrote in step 1 whenever the fog starts to settle back in. Example: Michael had told his father clearly that he would not attend family events where his father made cutting remarks about his career. His father called 3 days later, warmer than he had been in months, and invited him to dinner. Michael went. Nothing had changed, and the evening ended the same way it always did. The warmth was real. It was also not the same as change. He had to learn that distinction twice before it stuck. Holding a limit is not cruelty. It is the only honest signal you can send. Adapting this process for long-term family relationships. Family relationships require specific adjustments because the history is longer, the stakes feel higher, and the social pressure to keep the peace comes from every direction. The shared history creates a heavier fog. Decades of relationship mean decades of excuses already built up. You will need to be especially rigorous in step 1 because the rationalization is older and more deeply embedded. Expect the pattern recognition step to take longer with family members than with a partner or friend. Other family members will often resist your limit. When you change how you respond to family members' toxic traits, other relatives may experience it as a disruption to a system they have adjusted to. Some will ask you to not make things difficult. Understand that their discomfort is about their own relationship to the pattern, not evidence that you are wrong. The conversation may need to happen more than once. In long-term family dynamics, one conversation really resolves a pattern that has been forming for years. Plan for this as a process, not a single event. If you find yourself needing to address difficult dynamics more broadly, why avoiding difficult conversations is the hidden enemy of team synergy offers useful thinking on what sustained avoidance actually costs, and the same principles apply in personal relationships. Seasonal pressure points intensify everything. Holidays, funerals, and family milestones bring out toxic traits with extra force. Do not attempt your most important conversations at these moments. Prepare in advance for how you will hold your limits when the occasion creates pressure to abandon them. The core process does not change for family relationships, only the patience required to apply it. Common mistakes when confronting toxic traits in loved ones. Let me tell you about the mistakes I see most often. I have made most of them myself. The mistake: raising the issue in the middle of a conflict, when both people are already activated. Why it happens: the behavior has just occurred, and the urge to address it immediately feels like courage. What to do instead? Name what is happening briefly. I want to talk about this, but not right now. And return to it when things are calm. For help structuring that conversation, how to start a difficult conversation that's blocking your team, Synergy offers a practical framework that applies well beyond the workplace. The mistake: setting a limit and then not following through when it is tested. Why it happens: the cost of following through in conflict, guilt, or loss feels higher in the moment than staying quiet. What to do instead? Anticipate the test in advance and decide your response before it happens, not during it. The mistake: using the conversation to catalogue every past incident. Why it happens: years of unexpressed frustration find an outlet the moment the door opens. What to do instead? Focus on 1 or 2 clear examples that represent the pattern and stay there. The mistake: accepting an apology as a substitute for changed behaviour. Why it happens: apologies feel like resolution, and resolution is what you have been wanting. What to do instead? Watch what happens over the following weeks, not what is said in the room. If you are also navigating this in a professional setting, how to give constructive feedback without causing tension shows how to keep the focus on behaviour rather than character. A mistake: telling yourself that addressing the behaviour will destroy the relationship. Why it happens: fear turns a possibility into a certainty. What to do instead? Ask yourself honestly whether the relationship, as it currently stands, is one you want to preserve unchanged. These are not character flaws. They are gaps in the system. Fix the system. Your practical checklist. Use this checklist before you begin and after each conversation. I have written down 3 to 5 specific examples of the behaviour in plain, factual language. I can describe the pattern without using softening language or automatic explanations. I have separated my understanding of why the behaviour occurs from my acceptance of it. I know what specific change I'm asking for. I have identified what limits I will set and what I will do if it is crossed. I have chosen a time and place for the conversation that gives it a genuine chance. I have practiced my opening 2 sentences out loud. I have planned for the 3 most likely responses and know how I will hold my position. I have identified at least 1 person I can speak to honestly about this process. I am prepared to follow through on my limit the first time it is tested. I have not scheduled this conversation during a high-pressure family or social occasion. I have reminded myself that naming the harm is an act of respect, not of hostility. If you cannot check most of these, that is your starting point. Summary and next steps. You now have a process for something most people spend years avoiding. You can name a harmful pattern clearly, separate love from acceptance, set a real limit, and hold it under pressure. Toxic traits become invisible through repetition. Naming them in plain language is the first and most important step. Understanding why someone behaves harmfully does not require you to absorb the harm. A limit with no consequence is not a limit. It is an invitation for the pattern to continue. The pressure to return to the old dynamic will come often from the person you love and from others around you. Prepare for it. One conversation rarely resolves a long-standing pattern. This is a process, not an event. Your willingness to follow through on what you say is the only thing that makes your words credible. Addressing toxic traits honestly is one of the most courageous things you can do for a relationship you genuinely value. If the person you are thinking of shows harmful behavior in group settings, including social or professional ones, how to address passive-aggressive behavior that silently eroding team synergy gives you language for that specific pattern. If you find you need to address someone above you in a hierarchy, how to give feedback to your manager without damaging the relationship offers a careful approach. And if the behavior is showing up in a group dynamic, scripts for addressing team members who are undermining group synergy, and how to handle conflict during meetings are worth your time. Stopping toxic traits excusing is not an act of coldness. It is the only honest thing left when love alone has not been enough. Frequently asked questions. What does toxic traits excusing mean in close relationships? Toxic traits excusing means repeatedly finding reasons to overlook or justify harmful behavior in someone you care about. It often involves minimizing the impact of their actions, blaming circumstances, or telling yourself it will change. Over time, this pattern causes serious emotional harm to you. How do you recognize toxic traits in someone you love? Toxic traits include consistent patterns of manipulation, blame shifting, contempt, dishonesty, or disregard for your well-being. The key word is pattern. One bad day is human. A recurring cycle that leaves you feeling small, confused, or drained is something different and worth naming honestly. Why do people keep excusing toxic traits in loved ones? People excuse toxic traits because love creates a powerful pull toward hope and loyalty. Fear of conflict, fear of loss, and years of shared history make it genuinely hard to see clearly. The brain also adapts to harmful patterns over time, making them feel normal when they are not. Is it possible to love someone and still address their toxic traits? Yes, and addressing toxic traits honestly is often the most loving thing you can do. Staying silent protects the relationship in the short term, but causes deeper harm over time. You can hold someone in genuine regard and still refuse to absorb the cost of their harmful behavior. What is the first step to stop excusing toxic traits? The first step is naming the pattern clearly, without softening or rationalizing it. Write down specifically what the person does, how often it happens, and how it affects you. Seeing it in plain language strips away the fog that makes toxic traits easy to excuse. When does excusing toxic traits become enabling? Excusing becomes enabling when your silence or reassurance removes the natural consequences of someone else's harmful behavior. If your acceptance shields them from accountability and allows the pattern to continue unchecked, you've moved from loving someone to protecting a cycle that hurts you both. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblickthorne.com to get your copy.